Hare Krishna. I'd like to start by thanking all of you for coming. It's actually been a real pleasure for me to have your association. And I'll miss you. It's been nice meeting you regularly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just saying, Adi Purush, how grateful I am to the devotees who took the course. We have really good students, I think, here. Oh, is it? The whole book. Uh-huh. You can get the elements of style on the editing conference. You can download this whole file by... Sometimes... The other way... I forgot to mention this. This is another way to do the he-she... A neutral, it's a substitute for a neutral singular pronoun, which English doesn't have. So instead of saying he or she, you can try this, but it looks terrible. I wouldn't recommend it. I just saw it in a handout that I got in another class. Someone from Holland, someone who's doing the work for the Dutch BBT, did it like this. But if you want, you know, it's not very readable. It's not really a word. It's just a construction to substitute for a neutral pronoun. So it doesn't really work. Who's that paying his obeisances from a distance? Another mistake I found, this is, you know, you always should pick up ISKCON publications and edit them in your mind, at least. Remember how we discussed piled up nouns? You don't want to pile up too many nouns. Tell me what the piled-up nouns are. See if you can recognize them. Talking about a deity. Madhavrindapuri. Now the Parakram group is around Govardhan Hill today. They're going around. There's many nice places described here. It's really a pleasure to read this book. I don't mean to just point to the spot on the moon and say, look at the spot on the moon. But here's one. Talking about the deity that Madhavrindapuri found. Gopal. Gopal was put in Sankarshan Kund, some lake there, during a tyrant king attack. A tyrant king attack. During a tyrant king attack. It's a little hard to understand, isn't it? What does it mean? It means that probably a Muslim king, a tyrant, attacked Govardhan, so to protect the deity from the tyrant king who was attacking, they put him in a kund. During a tyrant king's attack. Yeah, but tyrant king is a real pile-up. He's a tyrant and he's a king. It's really a bad pile-up of nouns. Tyrant king attack. And they're used as adjectives. So it's a problem. You solve it, you tell me. The deity was put in Sankarshan Kund, that part's okay, so leave that part, just change this. During a tyrant king attack. You can easily do it. During is okay. He was put in Sankarshan Kund, Gopal was put in Sankarshan Kund. During. No, it's so complicated that way. During the attack of a tyrant king. So shy you didn't say it. Uh-huh, you weren't sure whether to keep it. During the attack of a... Yeah. Repositioned it, yeah. Yeah. You were, yeah, hesitant. It's not maybe the best, but, you know, you can use adjectives, and it's used as an adjective. It's a noun used as an adjective. So in that sense, you know, you have to be... You don't want to use more. You don't want to use too many. Nouns as adjectives. If you pile them up too much, then you have tyrant king. Do you want to know about editing? Maybe if the devotees would prefer that you'd leave, it's okay. Because we're kind of a close group, you know, we've been working together for almost a month. So maybe it's better if you don't stay. Let's go on. We were looking at the computer yesterday. Adi Purush brought the computer. And I wasn't able to give you a very elaborate demonstration because I haven't been using it. I haven't used it for 5 years, that program. I think Ishojan is using it now. She probably could tell us more about it. Anybody else using it? You used it for chakra. For Vipra Mukhamaraj's book. You went through his whole book like that, doing a little editing, little suggestion. You inserted notes and you did a little editing. Mother Ishojan, I was thinking of getting more comments from you because you're using the program. I was even thinking of asking Adi Purush to bring the computer back in again today because it's an important enough thing, I think, that we should maybe spend another 15 or 10 minutes on it. But maybe we don't need the computer. What would you say about it? May I just interject this? Yeah, when you're editing, you have to somehow keep track of your original because you want to be able to go back to your original and see what was there. You don't want to lose track of it. So don't edit your whole original and then save it and lose your original. Somehow you have to keep it. So there's a way to look at the original. There's a way to look at the original without splitting the screen. So when you save, what happens when you save? What do you save? You save the original with changes. It does that, huh? Yes. At some point you can just say, accept all the changes, and it'll do that, or reject them. Which program do you use? Word what? You work in Word? Which Word? Which version? XP. You have XP, huh? Ah, what happens at the bottom? You lost that advantage. Yes. Yes, I do that too. I divide it into chapters. Uh-huh. Okay. Break it into chapters. Yeah. As far as sending the whole book with track changes, you can do that. You can send a whole book if you zip it. If you zip a whole book, it's possible to send it fairly easily, but And if you only want to send one chapter, then you might lose your changes. You said you weren't using this Adi Purush, but you know anything more about it? How do you turn it on? Yesterday we bypassed that step. How do you turn it on? How do you activate it? I was introduced to this program by Dravida. About 5 or 6 years ago, he mentioned that it existed. And a few years ago, I was visiting him, and he was demonstrating it a little bit. And he told me about auto-text, how he makes auto-text. He makes one keystroke for International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he makes many keystrokes. He has a very sophisticated system of strokes. And he showed me what they were, and he even gave them to me on my computer. And I think I use some of them sometimes, but I haven't thoroughly gotten into it as much as he has. He has all these quick ways to move around in a manuscript. He's really developed a whole system of macro keys and auto text to really move around fast. Really specialized. Okay, let's go back for a few minutes now to these pages on festivals. The reason I included these is I expected, yeah? What, Ishwar? It's hard on the eyes. It's hard on the eyes. It can create eye strain, you know? Working. Dravida always works with 18-point text. He doesn't work with anything smaller. He blows everything up to 18. He has a special, what do they call it? Not a paradigm, but a, what's the word for your... No, but anyway, there's one word for your format that you're using. It's like a... But he created his own... No, not style sheet. When you open a template, yeah. He created his own template, which has 18-point type and allows the importation of Veda-based quotations, which won't run... And Wincom text that won't run off the screen. He created his own template for like fast editing of ISKCON text and Vedabase stuff, and you know, all. He's very skillful at this. Take what? A copy. And then, therefore, yeah, this is in your course material. We started to discuss it yesterday. I wanted to bring it up to you because I expected this book to be published by the time the course ended, by the last week of this. The book is at the printer now, though. It's not quite ready. But I want to bring up a few things that we didn't finish yesterday and go over a few of the things that we did go over yesterday and add a few more comments. On the title page, 118, I didn't discuss yesterday this arrangement of type. It begins with the title of the book followed by the byline. And 118, our typesetter put the word by on the byline, which normally you don't do, but in this case I was thinking of letting it go. I was thinking of making an exception. Sometimes it's done, but not usually. And I thought, well, maybe I'll let it go. But what we ended up doing, actually, is when we rearranged it, Lokanath Maharaj had a look at this, and he said, I don't like the subtitle separated so much from the title. Let's put the subtitle after the title, and let's move my name down to a lower position as the author. So that's what we did. And then we got... Then we could easily get rid of the word by. There was no question that the author's name, that he was the author down there. When you got the subtitle up to the right place, below the title, then it was clear what everything was. Yes, the title should be together. Normally you don't see this word by, except in magazine articles. BTG uses this. They have a magazine title, an article title, and then they say by such and such devotee. But in books, this usually isn't done on the title page. But I was just thinking of, I marked it okay because I was thinking, well, maybe I'll let it go. And anyway, we did end up changing it, but we rearranged everything to change it. Anyway, this book will come out, if everything goes according to plan, it'll come out in December. And it's been very carefully proofread. I don't think you'll find any mistakes in it, any typographical mistakes. If they're there, they escaped two or three or four proofreadings. We had two proofreaders working on it. I was proofreading as I edited, and then we had another devotee who was doing the Sanskrit diacritics. He was also paying attention to typos. And so four people have been looking at it. Let's see. There were a couple more things. Panch Pandava Prabhu brought up some points that I wanted to discuss in a little more detail. I gave him, I think, incomplete answers. This is in connection with the style sheet. That's on page 129. Ah, that's a good question. But see, this is the name that the festivals has come to be known by. It's known as the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. That's what.
I don't know such festival here.
Yeah, but we older devotees have always called it that, the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival, because it takes place at the time of Gopranim. It's at one time. It takes place at one particular time of the year, Gopranim time. And it's spread out over two locations. So it's the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. That's another name for the Gaur Pranim Festival. They're synonymous. The Gaur Pranim Festival means the same thing as the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival, at least in terms of how we're speaking in this book. We're speaking according to a certain kind of knowledge that the older devotees have based on their experience. And Vrindavan. We don't limit it to Mayapur. Yes, the Gaur Purnim part of the festival is there, but the second part of the festival takes place in Vrindavan. It's not called, at that time Gaur Purnim is over, and we don't say the Gaur Purnim festival up in Vrindavan. But that's this way of spreading it over two locations, it's not tied to that time, Gorpranim festivals. But in this book also, there is one chapter about the Kartik festival in Vrindavan in 1972. In 1972, Prabhupada started the Gorpranim festival. That year it was only in Mayapur. Then at Kartik time, he went to Vrindavan and held a month-long festival. So that's chapter 2 of the book. Chapter 3 of the book is the 1973 Gorpranim festival, which again was just in Mayapur. There was no project in Vrindavan at that time. No ISKCON project. But we had land, and Prabhupada was starting to develop the project in Vrindavan. So in 1974, for the first time, he held the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. That's when this name actually began to be used, in 1974. So chapter 4 of our book is called, or refers to the start of the Vrindavan, Mayapur Vrindavan festival. And then each year after that, we have a chapter, one chapter for the Mayapur part of the festival and one part for the Vrindavan part. And it continues that way until 1977. Okay. Page 129, the standards for the festivals. Now, the point I wanted to make, Panch Panabhu, is your questions were about particulars. You know, why this, why that? Now, I wanted to bring out some additional points. I chose some of these standards because of my particular taste, my particular experience. An editor can do that. It's like anything, you know, you can introduce a certain amount of variety. Like if you're dressing the deities and you put on a particular outfit, you can maybe choose what necklace goes nicely. And some of it will be based just on your experience. Many of my choices were choices based on BBT standards, but not all of them. I took this lowercase deity, for example, from the BTG. This is the new standard in the BTG. It's not in BBT books. And Dravida raised a question. He said, your readers will be shocked that you're using the lowercase d for the deity. He said, do you want to do this? You'll shock your readers. You'll make them think you're being offensive by using a lowercase d on deity. And I said, well, if it's good enough for BTG, it's good enough for me. I want to try it on the ISKCON audience, you know. I think it'll fly. I think it'll go. Other things, like you asked about, he arrived on November 1st and stayed until the 5th. I used to like to use what are called ordinals, this one with the ST, two with the ND. I never liked to use them with the ST raised. You shouldn't, if you use these, you shouldn't raise the ST or raise the ND. In a footnote, you might do that. Yeah, word, okay, there you go. Word does it automatically. Why shouldn't you use it? That's a good question. I have seen it used in one prominent literary magazine in America, which is considered one of the best literary magazines. They use these for dates, for example. If an article has a date line, then they'll say November 7th. And it looks nice. They use it in articles. They have a type of article in that magazine called Letter From, and then whatever city the letter's from. Letter From Vienna, Letter From Rome. It's some reporter just writing an article from that city. So then it fits in that format, Letter From. Then the date is there, just like you would find in a letter. So I used to like it for that reason. I thought, I'd like to use this in the editing I do. So sometimes I was using it. Then last year I was... The style book I used last year was Words into Type. It's a big manual, style manual. And I was reading in there that you can do this. Better not to use these ordinals, but you can do this arrangement. He arrived November 1 and stayed till the 5th. You can use the numbers. And I think Patricia O'Connor also recommends using just the numbers, if I remember. So I decided to go with this combination. And because it's in a big style manual, like Words into Type, that means that many, many, many English-speaking people have used this, and it's accepted by this style manual. It's recommended by this style manual. So I decided to go with that. It just based on...
How did you actually read it?
He arrived November 1st.
It's still saying 1st.
Yes.
Okay.
Or some readers might say November 1, but I think they'd more usually they would say first. But for the eye, it's like a calendar date, huh? It's like looking at the calendar, November 1. You know, you always look at a calendar and you see a number. You see no, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I guess from the visual point of view, it reinforces the idea of a calendar image, creates a picture of a calendar. So maybe it's good for that reason. You would write 1ST?
1ST.
Where would the ST be? Raised or down? Usually raised, huh? To me, that looks like a footnote then, Amo. And you don't use the fifth. Okay. A couple more points I'd like to make about style sheets and production. Like I said, if you're not short-staffed, if you have a good staff, you'll have a person on the staff called a production manager who knows quite a bit about the production line. He knows how the work goes through different changes in the hands of different people. He knows what to expect of a proofreader. He knows what to expect of an editor. He knows what an editor needs. He knows what a layout person needs. He knows how the three of them have to work together to bring the text to a final product. And if you don't have a production manager, you're not going to have a good end result. Even though you might do a good job on your editing, your book is going to maybe look sloppy because you don't have somebody there who knows how to put the whole thing, to put all the work of all the people together. That's what production management means. You have to bring everything together. When I was working at Back to Godhead, we had two editors and a typesetter. I was a typesetter. Nobody had computers then. And a layout person. And the second editor was also the production manager. That was Dravida. He would run things from office to office and say, you know, we need this and this and this. But we all kind of learned the other person's skills because it was such a small staff. We all knew quite well what the other person was doing. And I was able to pick up a sense of, you know, how the whole thing works. And an expanded version of this was at the BBT. The same thing was going on at the BBT in the production of Prabhupada's books, but with more people involved and with artists involved also. So that was a little more complicated. And all of us in the BTG, we all had experience working at the BBT also in Prabhupada's books. We all had spent a little time doing work on Prabhupada's books. Our BTG Sanskrit editor was the BBT Sanskrit editor. We would just mail him the page proofs. We would send them out to Los Angeles and then he would call us up. We would send them express mail. They would get there the next day. He would call us up within 24 hours and say, here are the corrections on the Sanskrit. And we had a proofreader, outside proofreader. We would send a photocopy of the laid out pages to her, express mail also. And she would call us up after a few days, having read the whole magazine. Meanwhile, the printer would get, then the printer would get the whole package, the color specifications. He would make the separations of the negatives, the slides, and he would put together the whole proof of the magazine. That would come back to us after a week or so. And then, especially the layout person, then he had to check all the color quality. And we still had opportunities to make changes in the text, but it was more expensive at that point because then the printer had to reshoot the pages. So we always tried to avoid making changes once we sent it to the printer. But the proofs would come back from the printer and then you had to check everything, you know. And so it's a real complicated process. And if you know the process, your book is going to come out better than if you don't know the process. Because if you're willing to put in the time it takes to check everybody's work and make sure that it's all being done right, it's called wearing another hat. You may be wearing the editor's hat, but you might have to put on the production manager's hat, or you might have to put on the proofreader's hat, or just the gopher's hat. You might have to be the gopher and carry around things to people and say, you know, I want this done and I want that done. And you're the gopher? It's one of your jobs. So these production notes that I wrote on 130, 132, I was just keeping these for myself, but I thought they might be helpful to you to get some idea of how the whole process goes and what kind of changes and what kind of unexpected changes come up. And let's just put them in the parking lot for a minute. I don't know if I want to just launch right into them. Let's just see what else I have on my list. On page 133, we have a particular problem that came up. This will just take a minute or two to discuss. Let's look at that. The frequency of certain words in the subtitles of festivals. Each chapter was about a festival, and most of the festivals had some repetitive features like parikrams, gopranim, darshans, morning walks, pishama, accommodations, and health was another one, but arrivals, arrival, arriving. So certain words occurred in the subtitles frequently, 6 times, 5 times, 3 times, 2 times, whatever. And this caught the author's attention. He said the subtitles seem sort of repetitive, and I think we have to do something about it. So I made this list. I made this list of occurrences of certain words just to see how badly we were doing. And I found out that in the 10 different chapters, we had a certain number of subtitles and how many times the words reoccurred. So we sent them to a writer, a person who used to edit for a newspaper. Now he's doing some editing for Hare Krishna World. He's married to an initiated devotee. His son here is Dhruva, this school teacher, Gurukul school teacher. Ken White is his name. So Lokanath Maharaj asked him to revise the subtitles, and altogether he changed 70 of them so that they're more lively and not so repetitive. So that was a good improvement on the book. We got last-minute help from Ken White. How many changes? 70 changes, and the total of subtitles is here. I didn't total them. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 85, 90, 100... About 120 total. Oh, regarding your list of standards for any particular book you're working on, like I mentioned yesterday, that has to go to your proofreader. If you want your proofreader not to be just completely lost and wondering, you know, what's the standard here? What's the standard? It's better to inform him in advance. Keep a list of the standards you used. It's good for yourself because you might want to go back and say, what are we doing with this problem? There's so many details. You have to think of thousands of details. So you keep a list of the main details, and then your proofreader can use it. You can use it. Another point about the production manager, he should be in charge of making a flow chart. I mentioned it briefly yesterday. I showed you on the computer screen. We used to use the code words Rev0, Rev1. Rev2, that stands for Revision 1, Revision 2. And the flow chart would indicate where is it going, where is it coming from and where is it going, which department has it now, where should it go next. Please look now at page 117. This brings up some hyphenation problems that occur at the stage when a manuscript is typeset. These are particular hyphenation problems that occur usually at the later stages. This is a very good list. This book. This is from the book, The New American Guide to Punctuation. Don't divide a one-syllable word. 2, don't divide a one-syllable word. Well, he just said one-syllable sound. Some words give the appearance of having more than one syllable, but are pronounced as one-syllable sounds. Among these are words with ed endings, words such as climbed, passed, spelled. So part of proofreading is to check your breaks, your word breaks, and make sure that you don't have bad breaks. One of the bad breaks, one kind of bad break, is breaking a one-syllable sound. Other one-syllable sounds that are not to be divided include these word endings. Don't divide these endings. Shul, shul, jin, shin, jis, shin, shis, shul, shis. Those sounds. As an example, special should never be divided, or would be divided as S-P-E hyphen C-I-A-L, never S-P-E C-I hyphen A-L, like that. 3, don't make a one-letter division. That is, don't divide words such as these. Acre, A-C-R-E, around, A-R-O-U-N-D. It doesn't look good. At the end of the line, it doesn't look good to have one letter and a hyphen sitting there. Even, even, idol, idol. Over, unite. 4, don't create awkward divisions. Here you will have to rely a lot on judgment and caution. Keep in mind that a person's name looks strange when spelled over two lines. Put in what's called a hard line ending. Then the computer can change it. It has to take that ending that you give it, a hard line ending. You tell the computer where the hyphen should go and fix it there. The old line, the line, yeah, on the right side. And watch out for this too. Watch. And he gives the example of assassin. Don't divide assassin. A-S-S hyphen. A-S-S. There's too many. You raise some readers' eyebrows, he says. 5, don't divide abbreviations or the initials of a person's name. Spell out NATO on one line rather than divide it NATO. This could happen with ISKCON. It did happen. I saw it in a book recently. I-S-K hyphen C-O-N. Similarly, T.S. Eliot should be written on one line. If necessary, break it as T.S., then Eliot, but never T. Break S. Eliot. It's the same for A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Don't divide large numbers expressed as figures. Don't divide 8,400,000 species of life. If you have to divide it, probably the best division is 8,400, then the break. Don't begin a line with a two-letter division. Don't begin a line with a two-letter division. Don't drop just two letters down. At the end of a line, it's okay. P-A hyphen shunts, patience. Don't drop it like in the word holy. H-W-H-O-L hyphen L-Y. Don't drop just two letters. Should be 3 or more, okay? Don't re-break a hyphenated compound. A hyphenated compound such as forget-me-not should be broken at the hyphens only and not as F-O-R hyphen get me not. Don't divide prefixes. Pseudo-scientific is better divided as pseudo hyphen scientific than as S-E-P-S-E-U hyphen D-O, then there should be a hyphen scientific. Try to avoid, if possible, dividing at the ends of more than two successive lines. So that's why it's avoided. What to speak of 4 hyphens. If you get 3 hyphens in a row, try to rearrange the words and hyphenate them differently. Try to avoid dividing the last word of a paragraph. If you must divide it, carry it over at least 4 letters. That's called an orphan or a widow. There's 2 words, widow and orphan, which apply to... What are they again? The orphan is one line, last line of the paragraph. Say what it is again. Child and husband and what? The husband, the paragraph, the husband goes to the next page.
Well, just to remember.
Yeah. And where's the child? What's the child? This is a metaphor, right? Yes. His parent. One line of the paragraph is at the bottom. One line.
The first line.
Yes. But the first line of the paragraph at the bottom of the left page or the right page, that's called a widow. The first line of a paragraph left at the bottom of the page is called a widow.
Sometimes.
Don't divide the last word on a right-hand page. That means... if possible, avoid a hyphenated word right here at the bottom. Don't make the reader, oh, what was that? He'll get over there and he'll see just part of the word. He'll have a hard time reading it. If you have an identifier, such as paren A, close paren, or paren 1, close paren, don't separate it from the matter to which it pertains. There's one other hyphen, kind of hyphen I want to bring to your attention, which you'll use in devotee editing. It's called a suspensive hyphen. It's described like this. Maybe I'll just show you the picture of it first. Foot just comes in the net. It just comes with the last mention, whatever the last item is. Yeah, the way it's written is correct. Yes, yes. Eight is written like that. You can pass the book around. Let everybody see that. Oxford dictionaries give all the places to break a word so you can check the breaks. Breaks are indicated by a raised dot usually. There's a dot that's raised almost to the top level of the letters. You're asking about these initials too. Why closed three initials? That was recommended by Words Into Type also, I think. And the space between two initials, it can be a thin space, like Adi Purush said, sometimes BBT. On the cover of a book, when Prabhupada's name's on the cover of a book, they use a thin space rather than a full space. But in the text, it looks good if it's a full space. Small caps, I don't have an example to show you, but you'll see it in this festival's book when it comes out. I was surprised you weren't familiar with it. But that would be... Why? What's an example of that? To call attention to the formation of the acronym. Yeah, yeah. I see. Well, yeah, in that case, they show the... That shows how the acronym is derived. That's one benefit of that. I was wondering about the punctuation on this learn and teach others, this slogan of the VIHE. There's this slogan of the VIHE, learn and teach others. It's something Prabhupada said to Burijan and became the slogan of the VIHE. I wonder if it's clear without a comma after learn. Learn. In German language, they use this word. They don't have a separate word for these two. The word, as far as I understand, Lehren stands for both learning and teaching. The Lehrer is the teacher, something like that. So when they use it, this word in English, they don't get it right. They say, yeah, we should learn the students and things like that. And you don't learn others. In English, you don't learn others. So I was wondering if to keep it the English clear, you would have to put a comma after learn, because it's a different thing than teaching others. Learn, that's one thing. That's one sentence. That's a command. Learn. So it's a complex sentence. It's a compound sentence. Learn, comma, and teach others. That's the second command. There's two separate commands here. I think we'll do these production notes just to finish out the day. We have about 8 minutes left. We can do them in 8 minutes or so. And then tomorrow I have another handout that you haven't seen. And then we have the Deadly Sins of Religious Writing, which are funny and instructive. And then we have a review also, a book review of the Fowler's Manual of Style for tomorrow. We'll spend 20 minutes on each one. 20th, yeah. Okay, production notes for festivals. In the first 2 weeks, by October 16th, I'd edited 10% of the manuscript. One reason I made this note is because I want to figure out how long it's going to take me. So if I figure out I've got 10% done, and I know how much time it took, I can project how much it'll take me. And if you're calculating this in dollars and cents, if somebody's paying you to do some editing, then you want to know. You can tell them, your book is going to take this much time, and if you charge by the hour, which I don't, you can say it's going to cost you so much, or whatever. But you can make financial calculations also based on this. During Kartik, I was staying at a house up the street, one of Lokanath Swami's disciples, a Delhi businessman, has his own house up in a colony up there. I was a guest there, and Lokanath Maharaj was in town for Parakram, and he was coming quite frequently to the house. He would take breaks from the Parakram and come to the house. So he was accessible. So he said, why don't you just read the manuscript this month, then you can ask questions on it. So I followed his suggestion, made notes, and met with him. In late November, I started a 9-week schedule, one chapter per week, which would take until the end of January. Reaching page 50 by December 10th, I was one-third the way through the manuscript. My stay in India also reached the halfway mark on December 20th. I had a limited visa, 6-month visa, so we had to consider that. By December 31st, I completed chapter 6, 90 pages of the manuscript, that's the manuscript, with 70 pages to go, 56% finished. On January 6th, I reached page 102, two-thirds of the way through the manuscript. That is, in 4 weeks, I did the second third of the book. My stay in India was at the end of the 15th week with only 10 weeks to go. On January 15th, I finished chapter 8, leaving the same kind of information. January 17th, I started chapter 9. Then I spent 2 days poring through Hari Sari's diary, certain chapters of his diary, finding elaborations, ways to elaborate on the chapter needed some more material. So I was looking for more material or to check details. I was checking details on the 76 Mayapur Vrindavan festivals. I figured that, you know, the already existing published books were there. They were out. Devotees had read them. So this new book had to coincide at least, you know, with those descriptions. There couldn't be discrepancies. So I had to check those books, make sure there were no discrepancies or maybe add in some details. I was backtracking. Therefore, on January 20th, I found corrections and elaborations. Therefore, on January 20th, I was only 5% further along. I took 2 days out for this reading, so I didn't make so much progress. I decided to make some cuts, a couple of incidents and descriptions of persons and some class excerpts. This brought me closer to being like 90% finished. And I added the description of the car accident. There's this dramatic car accident at the end of the festival. A Mercedes-Benz that has just come from Germany for Prabhupada gets not completely damaged, but badly damaged. Nobody was hurt. But that wasn't in the festival's book, and I thought, you know, how could you leave that out? Such a good way to end a chapter, right? So I included that. And then we got, at the end of the festival, end of the Vrindavan festival, and then Prabhupada was in Delhi and he flew on to Bombay or something. So it was just a matter of adding one or two paragraphs and saying that it was described by Hari Sari that this accident took place and why it took place. And the driver was trying to teach the other devotee how to take care of the car, how to drive the car at the same time. And you know how Indian roads are. You can, you know, there's the bullock cart. Oh my God. Step on the brakes, but there's no time to stop. On January 22, I had 8 weeks left to go, my visa. On the 21st, I did my final revisions of chapters 1 and 2. You go back over, and not just once. Sometimes you go over something 20 times before you have it right. You have to revise and revise and revise sometimes. And I revised for the final time the three front sections. That's the prologue, the preface, and so on. On January 23rd, I started chapter 10. I found some monkey stories in the Veda base that were missing in the manuscript, but Maharaj had read them somewhere and he wanted them in the book. I met the artist and Kumarupa, the typesetter and designer, and planned a cover and how to complete the illustrations. End of January, I reached the halfway point in the last chapter. On the 29th, Vashant Pashami, I finished. I noted that date because that was approximately the same date I had finished Burijan's study guide to the Bhagavad Gita. On the 31st, I completed my review of Dinanath's work on the diacritics in the second half. So I was in the position of having to review the work of the Sanskrit diacritic man, even though I was the editor. I was wearing another, you know, I was wearing the hat of the production manager, so I had to review his work. On Feb 23rd, we went into the third day of a retreat on the beach in Puri, Jagannath Puri. Maharaj had read 40 pages and discussed them with me in 3 days. He had 65 pages left to read in the last 3.5 days. We were going swimming every day. That was nice. We were on the beach. We received the first half of Kishori's proofreading in Puri. Before we'd come, I discussed Nitya Tripta's suggestions on the artwork with Alexandra, who was in Mayapur, and she agreed to make some of the changes Nitya Tripta suggested. She left for Vrindavan on February 22 with printouts of the artwork, which I had brought with me, and the suggested changes. I spoke with Maharaj about his financial dealings with Kumarupa. We called Kumarupa and Maharaj spoke to him. That same morning, we completed his revisions. March 6th, Kumarupa was ready to scan the slide for the cover and to revise some elements on the cover, but his scanner wasn't working, so he had to go to Delhi. Alexander's suitcase was stolen on the train, but I had copies, photocopies of the revised artwork, so I had the backup. 2 days ago, Alexander got copies of the artwork that has to be revised from me. I am preparing working schedules and notes on the remaining work. Gopranim, yesterday I gave Kumarup the complete book containing all Kishori's corrections and the author's preliminary revisions, so now he can prepare the rough printout. We discussed earlier how to use the festoon in the opening section, some artwork, and how many blank pages to include in the front matter. You know, you have the title page, then you have a blank, the copyright page, then you have acknowledgments, then you have a blank page, and the contents, and a blank page, then the prologue, and all this. I would do well to review all of Kishori's proofreading to improve my ability to use the comments on. Kishori's also an editor, so she's a very good proofreader. You can learn even editing from her proofreading. 13th, Karma Rupa found banana trees in a magazine and will adapt them for use on the back cover. He began the typesetting, which was so rough that it had to immediately be corrected and printed out again, something we had not planned. He just did a kind of quick job thinking we needed a really, really rough version. But I wanted a very carefully done version because I was leaving for Europe and I had to have a really pretty good idea of what the typesetting looked like. So we had to do it again. I made a final adjustment on the indentation of second paragraphs in interview excerpts. We had not set carefully enough the standard of how much to indent the second paragraph in the excerpts, so we had to do that. Thousands of details. Alexander's making progress on the revisions for the artwork. Radisham, who is paying for the printing, is being kept up to date and had some workable suggestions on how to keep to our production schedule. Dinanath was in Vrindavan and worked on the acknowledgments. So I got the final printout, and I laid out the back cover type, and that was the end of that. There was much more work that went on after this, but that at that point I stopped keeping notes. Okay, that's all for today.